All right, good morning. It's just after 10 a.m. on Saturday, April 4th, 2026. We are at the Andrew Carnegie Free Library and Music Hall in Carnegie, Pennsylvania. The main purpose of this talk, which is being held in front of a live audience, is to learn more about Carnegie veteran Frank Palombi, Corporal, United States Army Infantry, who served here in the States from 1953 to 1955. There are well over 500 veterans in Carnegie, living veterans.
Yes.
You're one of them. And that's saying something for a town about the population of 8,000, because that's more than the national average. Secondary purpose of this talk is to permanently preserve it, make it available to the public for many generations to come. Special thanks to the library for that. So this is going to be part oral history and part interesting conversation, and we're going to throw in some fun also. Frank was kind enough to agree to be our second veteran in our From the Foxhole Talk with Carnegie's Veterans series. We call it From the Foxhole because foxholes are used in war to hide from the enemy and or whatever the enemy is firing at you. Foxholes can therefore offer some comfort and protection. In our context, similar to that, our foxhole is a safe place and a safe space where two buddies can talk together openly. It is going to be an open talk. We're going to get to know Frank a little bit, the ins and outs of his service, some good, maybe some not so good, and the impact of his service on him and his loved ones. That impact, good or bad, stays with veterans usually for as long as they live. Frank's service has lingering impact to this very day. We'll talk for half an hour, maybe 40 minutes, and then we'll have some questions for Frank after that. For the veterans here, and for those who love and care for them, if at any point during this conversation you need to take a break because of what we're talking about, please do so. Sometimes when veterans tell their stories, other veterans hear triggers in those stories, and those triggers can cause unexpected thoughts or emotions. We get that. So please do whatever you have to do. On that note, please be reminded that the National Crisis Line phone number is 988. If you are a veteran or calling on behalf of a veteran, press 1 when you reach the menus. The call is free. Help is free. The reason for the call does not have to be a life or death emergency. Department of Veterans Affairs has a representative here, Mr. Andrew Klein, who will be more than happy to provide you with all the information he knows about the National Crisis Line and how the VA can help. Now that we are done with the formalities, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay.
You sound like you're in a swimming pool.
Oh. I sound like I'm in a swimming pool. She's starting already.
The swimming pool comment comes from Mary Ann Palombi, and y'all still hang out together, married 73 years, and I think that's
Christmas Eve.
Now we know. All right, Frank, when and where were you born?
I was born in Worcester, Ohio.
Okay.
August 30th, 1933.
And you moved here?
We moved over here 6 years later.
Okay.
Into the area, okay. And when I say in the area, we ended up in Rook. And then we, about 2 years in Rook, and then we went down to Vine Street in Rosslyn. And you know where Rosslyn is, don't you, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We moved down to Rosslyn, 15 Vine Street, and I got drafted. I should have never moved. But anyhow, yes, that's the way it happened. And from Rosslyn, it was USA Army.
Okay. Army, and what job did you do?
When I first went in, I had to be careful. My dad said, never volunteer for anything, so I didn't. So they asked if I wanted to be a field wireman. I had no idea what it was. I said, not really. I said, but if that's all you have, I take it. So I took the field wireman as a an MOS, and that's your working figure. And
to military occupational specialty, MOS.
Yeah, there she goes. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, I said, yeah, I'll do that. And then when I got in, they found out that I knew how to type. I became a company clerk.
Where were you stationed at when you were in the Army?
I was in Camp Rucker, Alabama for 16 weeks plus two, and then we marched from Camp Rucker, Alabama to Fort Benning, Georgia. Marched.
Now, usually when you get transferred from one installation to another, you don't have to walk.
We did.
Duffel bags and all.
Duffel bags and all.
So anyhow, yeah, we ended up at Fort Benning, Georgia, and in Fort Benning, Georgia, was they made me TDY, that's temporary duty, to the MPs, and I qualified with all my weapons. I mean, I was good at that. So we We got stationed up there, and my wife came to live with me up to Buena Vista Estates, and we had a duplex, but it was held with two people, Tom Stebbins from New York and his wife, and then my wife and I, and that's where we were housed until I got discharged, and that was June of 55.
Okay, and I think this is pretty cool. What do you remember your serial number?
U.S. 523-12528.
Let's circle back around to the Army in a few minutes. We're going to talk about that at length. Tell us about your childhood here in Carnegie. What was fun? What wasn't fun? Take us back in
the
time
Army?
A little bit. No, before you went into the
before.
Army.
Well, before I went into the Army, my dad used to bring the kids together and say, excuse me, you got to play music. Okay, got to play music. So we started playing music, and we had a gathering. Some of the high school kids come down at the house, and he started a band called the Palombi Rhythm Boys. And Bobby, my cousin over there, he knows all about that. We were called the Rhythm Boys, and that's what we did. We played music. We played big band stuff, and we played some polkas, some waltzes. And it was nothing but my dad. He had a band. I never knew it. I said, Dad, what'd you call your band? He said, Frank Paul and his parents. What the hell was that? And he said, well, that's what we called ourselves. I never knew my dad could play a lick. And I never heard him pick a saxophone up. But he said he did. So who am I to deny, right? So from there, we played some songs for railroad gatherings, it was called the Palombi Rhythm Boys. And every time the railroad had something going on, we got invited in, and we played big band. It was really nice, it really was. It sounded like we knew what we were doing, and we did. My dad would not let us go until we did it right. So we played music, and from there, it led to more music in my field. And I never knew that I was going to end up doing what I did when I got out of the Army. So this is all before the Army we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What school did you go to here in Carnegie?
Carnegie High.
Okay.
Class 1952.
Where was Carnegie High located as a student?
Where was
there?
That? Right over the hill.
Is it still there?
No, they swapped it out for a religious church.
Okay. Okay. What did you do while you were in high school? For fun or for athletics?
Oh,
or?
Well, I went to high school and I played drums. So I became a head drummer. And that's where I met this, my wife, Marianne. She was a flag porter. And I said, watch, hon, don't let it hit you. She was right. She let it hit her. But it didn't hurt her. So we were in a band together. And the best times of our life is whenever we would march in the parade for May the 30th, Decoration Parade. We would march up the avenue, and the suits were wool. They were made of wool, almost. I couldn't believe it. I was sweating. March up the avenue, all the way around, down through Glendale, down through the Main Street, up the hill to the cemetery on Noblestown Road. I said, there got to be something up there. No water, no truck. We had to walk back. We had to choke ourselves without thirst. So that was fun. That was fun. So when we got back, I was too tired to do anything. So I said, hon, we're not going to go to the show tonight. You know that. She said, I don't care. She always paid the way. So that's where that ended my music, anyhow, up to that point.
And you were quite the athlete, too, I understand.
I was a fighter.
Oh.
Yeah, I played basketball, baseball. I did. I have scorecards at home for when we played basketball at the boys' club. I had the names of the teams and who was on them. And when we got done with that, we played football. My dad, he never threw a football in his life. You got to stop that guy when he's running. How do you stop? How are you supposed to stop anybody? Hit him. So that's what he's telling me, to hit him. So my brother and I, my brother T, he's passed away last year. We went up and we played scrimmage against Carnegie High junior team, not the big team, junior team. We got stomped. That's okay. Coach Gianangelo wouldn't have it any other way. So we did. We went up to high school and we played them, and it was good. I played lineman, believe me, 145-pound lineman, but that's what it was, all lightweight. And after the football game, we got into softball the next year. I played softball, and that was in the Pittsburgh League, and that was a treacherous league. We had the Pittsburgh Dons. They come from the Westinghouse Field. We'd go over there, and we had a hard time hitting the ball, let alone running base, because they had this underhand fast pitch. But we played there, and my wife traveled with me every time I went to Pittsburgh. She knew her way around, believe me.
Yeah, we're still right there.
Turn the speaker down.
Well, that's what are you here for? Anyhow, play softball, and then we played baseball. Oh, we had so much fun. So after that, it was like normal life. And then when I come out of the Army, then I picked up on my professional, I call it professional career, of playing music. Do you want to hear about that?
Not yet.
Not yet.
So in Carnegie,
yes,
where you were never bored.
I was never born.
You were a newspaper delivery sales type of person. Were you the little kid that stood out on the corner and said, extra, extra, read all about it?
Okay, here we go. When I was in high school, I still sold papers. There was a place called the K&K Restaurant. I don't know if anybody remembers the K&K Restaurant. You got it back there. She remembers. Okay. On Sunday, I would be standing on a corner hustling the papers. And who comes toddling over the hill? My favorite customer.
Otis Wagner.
Yeah.
Okay,
is it okay to talk?
Honest
Wagner, it was always, hi, sonny boy. How are you doing this fine morning? Oh, Mr. Wagner, I'm doing fine. He'd pat me on the head like I wasn't short enough. He'd pat me on the head. And my son said, Dad, you didn't have to save the nickel. You should have had him sign a baseball card, which is now worth $5.1 million. I didn't know. I said, geez, why didn't you tell me? He said, you could have taken a pack of cards up there and become a multimillionaire. I said, well, I wasn't thinking about that. I'd get a Dixie cup and rip the lid off and see who was on there, and I'd have to sign that. That's how they used to do the Dixie cup.
How many times would you say you and Mr. Wagner had these interactions?
Well, interaction was, he said, what do you want to be when you grow up? Because he would always ask me that. And I knew he played baseball, and he was one of the best. I said, I played a lot of baseball, but I don't know how good I am. He said, unless you're really good, don't do it. And he was right.
That's true.
He was right.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed every minute of my younger life, because when I was there in my younger life, besides selling papers, I used to work at Pasco's Clothing. You remember Pasco's Clothing? Quinn's Supermarket. Quinn's Supermarket. I used to deliver. And I used to stock the shelves at Pasco's Clothing. And then I would shine shoes. What? I don't know. We went to the place where the guy sold hats and everything. And I went down there, and one of the Carnegie wrestlers, Dave Gornick, he was with me. He said, Frank, you take the right chair, I'll take the left chair. I said, okay. So somebody want a right chair, I'd get a hustle. In a left chair, he'd go. But that was our income. And then it snowed heavy. It snowed real heavy. We got a call to go down to G.C. Murphy's, go up the fire escape, and shovel the snow off the ridge. I said, what happens if we fall through? If it's heavy now, we're going to add to it. He said, don't worry, it won't. That was his remark. So I had my brother-in-law at the time, my brother, I had three of my friends from Rosslyn. We went up and shoveled the snow off, and then we had to get down and shovel the sidewalk. Does that make sense? But it was double pay. I mean, you know, we had fun doing it. We went up on the roof, and we did all of that. And down on the sidewalk, we got that cleaned off, too. And we prayed for another big heavy snow, because we liked that $5 he paid us, you know.
So you were quite the entrepreneur back then, even.
I had to be.
Yeah, well, okay. Yeah. Okay. So things are pretty well. You worked pretty hard. You played pretty hard. You spent some time with one of the undisputable baseball gods, Honus Wagner, for those of you who don't know. And then in June of 1953, at the age of 19, Uncle Sam came calling, and you got drafted.
Yes.
And you had about a month's notice to ship out.
Yeah.
Now, do you remember what that interruption was like? Were you, did you welcome the news, or was it aggravating?
I was concerned because it was pretty hard to get a job because you were called draft bait after high school.
Right.
And I said, well, I got a job with a huckster selling off the truck. And that's Mr. Raspandi, and he comes from Crafton. He picked me up and said, Frank, whatever you do, be nice to people. I said, okay, Mr. Raspandi, I respect that. So we went up to Cannonsburg, where we sold a lot of potatoes and peppers and that. That's all they wanted, potatoes and peppers on them. And then we sold down in Crafton, we sold regular tomatoes and stuff like that. But that lasted for about a month because I had to go get ready for the Army.
Okay, so kind of sort of no choice. And good point that you made, that it was difficult to find regular work if you were of draft age at the time. The Korean War was still ongoing.
Yes, it was.
So I can understand where, unfortunately, some business owners were reluctant to hire people that might soon be leaving. Okay. Speaking thereof, the Korean War wasn't, the ceasefire didn't happen until after you were drafted. Was there a concern about that until you heard the news about the ceasefire?
Yeah, there was a big concern because when we marched over to the federal building, you know, to have our last physical, you know, they didn't do much. They'd check you out and they'd look at you in the eye and say, you're okay, yeah, you're all right, okay. So we marched over to the railroad station, Smithville Street, I think. And we got on the train and headed for Fort Meade, Maryland.
Okay.
Okay.
For processing.
What's that?
Induction and processing at Fort Meade.
Yeah, Fort Meade, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What was that like?
Well, it was tough. It was tough because it was a new way of life for us. We didn't have, well, we had some friends around us. I can name them later on. But we did have friends over there that we knew, we grew up with. And they said, okay, they called her name out, Frank F. E. Palombi. Let's see, not Fort Benning, but down in Alabama. They wanted to ship us down there. Hot.
Yes.
Nothing but hot.
So you got indoctrinated, you did the initial paperwork, and they sent you from Fort Meade to Fort Rucker, Alabama, Camp Rucker at the time.
Yeah, it was Camp Rucker at the
time. Which is way down in lower Alabama. This is in the summer. It's sweltering down there.
Well, yeah, Camp Rucker was awfully hot, and they put the black flag up if there was no practice or no emotion anywhere. You had to keep a cool head down there because it was hot. That's all I can say, it was hot.
The black flag was an indicator that it was too hot to train?
The black flag would say, no today. Go back to the barracks, clean up, and do some yard work around the barracks. Okay. That was it.
Okay. And this was during basic training? You're doing basic training?
During basic training, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about what you remember about what that basic training was like?
Yes, I can. We had to go through infiltration course. That's where they put you on the ground and you crawl under barbed wire. You know, you crawl through it and you make it to the other side. Don't put your head up because they were firing. They wouldn't tell you if it was blanks. Every now and then they throw a real one in, but blanks mainly. They didn't want to kill us before we got started. So
where's that?
So we went through the infiltration course, and then we went to the infamous gas chamber. Mm-hmm. And that was something else.
Mm-hmm.
You would go in with the gas mask, and what you had to do was you had to go in and you had to clear out the gas mask, and you had to sing My Heart Cries for You. I don't know what the hell they did that for.
You had to sing.
Because everybody was in there crying. They did it the wrong way. They breathed in, and all that gas was in there. So anyhow, we had this one dude from Cleveland, Ronnie Deegan. I'll never forget him. There was a sergeant standing in front of the door that wouldn't let anybody out until you could. He threw that guy out the way just to get outside and clear his gas mask. But that was it. But my secondary was I had to go back to the main office, and I had to do the morning report because I became a company clerk because I knew how to type. That was good. That was a good job. So the captain that we had at the time was Captain Edward Ewing from Monessen. And he looked at me and said, "Where are you from?" I said, "Carnegie." "Oh, steel mill." I said, "Yeah, steel mill." He said, "I want to know everything that happens, but I want it on the morning report." So I had a difficult job getting my training out of the way and coming back and doing the morning report. Morning report says from active duty to the hospital, or from active duty to maybe furlough, from active duty to AWOL. If you couldn't find the guy, he was AWOL. So I made the morning reports up, and I give it to Captain Ewing, and I had a sergeant before me called Sadowski, big dude. He said, "Don't worry, Frank, everything will be all right." I said, "What am I doing wrong?" He said, "Nothing." He said, "Just keep doing what you're doing." I said, "That ain't much." I said, "I don't have time for anything." He said, "That's the way it's going to be."
So let me help everybody understand. In basic training, it's called basic training for a reason. That's where you learn all the basics about being a soldier. Nobody else has a job while they're in basic training. You have additional duties like kitchen police or kitchen patrol, whatever you call it, fire guards. Some people work in the arms room to hand out weapons for training. But nobody ever has an actual job or they're in basic training. So you had a job and you were in basic training. It's astounding to me and to those of us that have been through basic training that you were able to pull this off. It's a little bit astounding that the Army ever thought that they could use somebody as part of as one of their full-time administrators, for lack of a better word, and to have you do good in basic training.
I did that, yes.
So when you first told me that, I was flabbergasted, and I still am. I can't imagine what that time commitment was like.
It was hard. It was hard on me, yeah. And then whenever we had physicals, they said, "You got any filling in your teeth?" I said, "I am." "Yep. This is just an add-on." I went to the dentist, and they said, "I can fill them or I can pull them." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, you got a lot of small cavities, and I don't know how the filling's going to hold, and if you're out in the battlefield." I didn't even want to hear that. He said, "If something happens to your teeth and you get mad or you get hurt," I said, "Pull them." So he did. Not all of them, a little bit at a time. So they fixed me up with a set of teeth, and they even put my serial number in the teeth so I wouldn't lose them.
You have to say that again? I want to make sure I understand this. You got new
teeth
from the Army.
There was my number. My number was in my teeth.
You put your serial number on your teeth.
Not the whole number, but the last 2528 was in there.
I have never.
And every time I'd brush them, I'd say, "Whoa, here, Frank, you got a set of teeth."
I have never, ever heard anything like that in my life.
I swear.
No doubt.
I even, when I come home, they were soaking one day. She came and said, "What's that?" I said, "My teeth." "What's that writing?" He went, "Whoa." I said,
"Wow."
Am I right?
Yep.
Or just in case you misplaced your teeth, they'd be able to help them find their way home.
So anyhow.
Okay. So this was still at Fort Rucker, Camp Rucker, sorry. Okay. Your commanding officer, Camp Rucker, had a good stance on African-Americans in the Army at the time. And I want you to talk about that just for a minute, because the Army had been desegregated for 5 years at this point, but there was still a lot of friction, we'll call. And tell us about that commander and what his belief was on the matter.
When I got drafted, there was a gentleman, Dennis Dean, from Camp Hill. That's right at the road from Carnegie, okay. And Dennis Dean was African-American, okay. And while we were in basic training, I said, Denny, let's go to town and go to shows and have dinner, because it was getting toward the end, you know. Okay, we'll do that. So we got on the bus, went into town. He was not allowed in the theater where I went in. He had to take another entrance. He wasn't allowed to drink out of the fountain that I drank out of. He had to go to another drinker. And we found out that we couldn't even go in the same restaurant where I went. He had to go another part. We were very disturbed about that. And me, not even thinking, I said, let's go. We're out of here. I don't want to stay in the town anymore. So we went to the town and back on the same day. Never saw a show, never ate, never did anything because of that incident right there.
But it's unfortunate, and unfortunate that it's still relevant today. We could use more people like you that refuse to give in to that. And your company commander also very much embraced the diversity in the Army at that time, you told me before. So my hat's off to you for sticking up for Denny like that. And we'd all be a little better off if stuff like that would continue to happen. Okay, so off to Fort Benning, your permanent duty station.
Yeah, we were going to give Camp Rucker back to the National Guards. You know, there's an irony thing about the Camp Rucker thing. After I got out of the Army, I'll get back to this. After I got out of the Army, I had an uncle that married my Aunt Judy, that's my mother's sister. He was down at Camp Rucker in helicopters, and his buddy, George Chester, was at Camp Rucker in the helicopters. Well, them two, they were slickers. They said that they were married and they were living off post. But anyhow, the point was, they were down Camp Rucker, and they said there was absolutely nothing down there for them after we got out. I said, I know all about it.
Right.
Yeah, I know all about it.
Right.
So that was the irony of the whole thing.
Okay. So off to Fort Benning. You're infantry, or were you working as the field?
I was a company clerk.
You were still the company clerk.
Wait, yeah.
So you were such a good company clerk at Fort Rucker that you kept being company clerk at Fort Benning.
Yes.
Okay, but that's not the only thing you did at Fort Benning.
No.
Okay, I spent 9.5 weeks, longer than basic training, learning how to become a military police officer, a certified military police officer in the United States Army. This guy, he didn't even spend 9 minutes learning how to be a military police officer in the Army. Tell us, Officer Palombi,
yes,
how all that came about and what you did, please.
Well, they needed some added help. And since they called off the Korean thing, they had all these guys over there with shots in their arms and up their butt. I don't know. They said, okay, we don't need you over there anymore, so we're going to do this. What are you going to do? I'm going to make you a TDY MP. I said, oh, yeah. You know how, well, they looked at my record. They saw me, I qualified for weaponry. And I had a couple lieutenants tell me what to do. And I had to post guards at different places, you know. Yeah, that was it. I go to town one day, and we had to stop guys from going over to, you know, Phoenix City.
Yeah.
He knows all that. You couldn't go over there because they were rolling the servicemen on payday. So we're driving down. I have my driver, and I'm driving down with my sunglasses on. She was in there saluting all Jeeps. All Jeeps coming down, she was saluting them. Her and her girlfriend, Willie. I said to the driver, hey, stop, pull over. I pulled over. I said, hey, lady, come here. What do you want? And, oh, is that you, Frank? No, yep. Why are you saluting Jeeps? I have to. I said, oh, do they have a rule book out for you? No, she said, but I have to because you're in the Army. Okay. I made her quit saluting Jeeps because she thought that she was...
So, that was my duty.
Yes, there you go.
Right, right. For a little context, Fort Benning is based near Columbus, Georgia, on the border with Alabama, close to it. A little town called Phoenix City, Alabama, at the time, and some would say still now, is a questionable municipality, we'll say that.
Bad.
And when Frank refers to the GIs going over to Phoenix City and being rolled, that means being taken advantage of in any type of situations. Since we're also talking a little bit about the seedy side of things that you experienced, I understand that the lovely Mrs. Palombi even got recruited for some special kind of work while you were at Fort Benning.
Well, you want to tell them what you did?
What did I do?
It goes like this. This major had a wife.
There was this major, his wife came from Germany. So these guys are all out on bivouac. So she thought she was going to be very generous, and she invited about 12 of us wives for lunch. So we're eating lunch, and she said, oh, I have a surprise for you girls. You can make some extra money. Oh, yeah? What kind of money? She said, well, when your husband's away, she said, you can make money by... We said, we don't think so. She said, but I would get a profit from it. We said, no, we're not that kind of a woman. We're married to our husbands, and we stay with our husbands. So when we left, the MPs were parked outside, and we went to the MPs, and we told the MPs, which she was one of us, to become prostitutes, okay?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They got out of their Jeep so fast, and next thing you know, she's coming out of that door with her hands behind her handcuffed, and they shipped her back to Germany.
Really?
Yes.
Well,
that's what she was doing. That's what's happening.
There. Take that.
Okay. Well, we're all glad that you chose that path instead of working for her.
Yeah, yes. So she went back to Germany, and we were happily ever after. Yeah, she was something.
That's not funny, but it kind of is.
But what was funny is her husband was an officer.
Yeah.
He
was a major. He was doing this on the side. He didn't even know it.
He didn't know it.
Oh, so he was, okay. Okay, he wasn't dialed in. All right. Another interesting thing, Denny helped you, Denny Dean, he helped you invest your money?
Yes. Every payday, Denny Dean, excellent man, beautiful man. I knew him. I knew his brother from playing football against his brother. But he said, Frank, every payday you give me $30. Oh, what's this, a scam? No, he said, I mean it. Denny would never do anything like that because I knew Denny. I played cards and he played dice. I was never broke. The money that I gave him initiated him to go out and spend and win money playing dice. Sometime the people that he played dice with didn't have money, so he'd take a ring or a watch. I give my wife more jewelry than anybody I know. He never give me money back. He give me rings and watches. I said, oh, my God. So that's why I was never hurting on payday.
That's a pretty good racket. I mean, that's a pretty good...
Oh, he was an excellent dice player.
Okay, so that was kind of sort of it. You did at 2 years... And then you had to serve 6 years on standby after that. But it was more or less uneventful. It wasn't terrible. It wasn't always fun, but...
No, it wasn't bad.
Okay. And you came back here to Carnegie.
Yep, came back to Carnegie. I was married then because we got married on Christmas Eve, 1953. We've been married ever since, right?
So far.
She no run away, and I have to go look for her. Anyhow, we celebrate a lot of birthdays. My grandchildren are back there. They come in from Maryland. My grandson, Mark, and his wife.
Chris.
I said Chris, yeah. Put your hand up, Chris, so I know who you are. That's him right there. And he's an advocate sports player. He played hockey in college. He taught hockey. His both sons are playing hockey now. So, you know, permeates.
Thank you for joining us today, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. So how are things in Carnegie? You first.
Huh?
You ran a Polka Orchestra. Go, tell us.
Polka.
Polka.
Well, yes, I did. I have a Carnegie Signal item here that has a big write-up about my band. And it was in June of 1995, okay? When I started out, we had polkas, we had big band, we had everything. We had country, we had doo-wop. And speaking of doo-wop, it's in the family now. There's Bobby Palombi out there. Put your hand up, Bobby, don't be ashamed. His sister Jenna right beside him. The Dantes. A lot of you heard about the Dantes. They did everything.
Excellent.
And so I traveled with my band. My wife loaded buses up for me. I was on radio for 14 years, and I couldn't do it anymore. It was getting too much. We traveled Canada a couple times, all over the place. And what's that?
Jimmy Starr.
Well, yeah, with Jimmy Starr, Frankie Yankovic, we did all that. It's right here. And when we traveled, I was on the radio. I would announce that we were having a bus going to the Italian festival in Canton, Ohio. And I'd give my wife's number. By the time I got home, it was filled. People wanting to go to the Italian festival in Canton,
Ohio. Nice, good, yeah. Good.
So it was, you name it, Canada. All over the place.
You went to the Poconos frequently.
Poconos, Catskills. And Reverend up here, he knows about the Poconos. He was born on that side of eastern Pennsylvania. And his wife, Effie, she was here last time, weren't you, Effie? Anyhow, yeah, we traveled everywhere. And like I said, this one over here loaded the buses up for me. And it was amazing how many people loved to travel.
Interesting. And obviously fun. Yeah, because you did it for so long.
Oh, my God, yes, I did them so long. And I'm still playing. I'm still playing on Tuesday night, the VFW in Carnegie. We get down there, and we play different style of music. We play some country. And Gracie can tell you, she sings a little bit with us. And Effie and Sarge are always there. And we enjoy it. That's all. We don't get paid. We don't want paid. We want to share our music with the other people down there. And that's the way it is right now.
Well, I was gonna get to that in a bit, so let me paint a picture. The VFW, Veterans of Foreign Wars, every town across this country has a VFW post. It's a place for Veterans of Foreign Wars and other associates to come hang out. And you're wearing your Army veteran hat as we speak. And you go to the time and the trouble to set up and play in the band every Tuesday here in the Carnegie VFW. So I'd like to believe that's because you still have an affection for being a soldier and for your other service people and for your other veterans. And why, what was the impact? Would you be doing this if you weren't a soldier, I guess, is a better way to say it.
Well, I think it was instilled in me when I was a kid in school. My dad, like I said, my dad started the orchestra called the Palombi Rhythm Boys, and it started from there, and it just never left me. And when I was in the Army, we had two special guests come down to Camp Rucker, and Webb Pierce was one of them. And they're such nice people. They really were, you know. You see, anybody here play guitar? Well, I know how to play a rhythm guitar, but I couldn't pick. But I play good bass. Okay. So it's just something that I never lost, you know, the like of. I always wanted to do it. I did it.
The Tuesday turnouts at VFW and Carnegie are pretty decent considering the size of the post. He's got a set of pipes on him, too. Certain songs he'll... he'll sing lead, and it doesn't sound too bad, I got to admit. So it's pretty impressive. So for what that's worth, thank you for continuing to do that, and we think that's pretty cool. Tell us, based on your experience at the VFW and with other veterans and your Army experience, what do you want us to know right now and maybe sprinkle in a little bit about what you think people should know a few years from now about what it's like being a veteran, how the veterans are treated, and just to explain your thoughts on that, please.
Well, whatever we're talking about is the veterans have a special place in life for me, special, because they sacrifice so much. They don't know if they're coming back. They don't know anything more than I'm in the Army. I'm serving the people of my country. And that's what I put on. I want to do. I want to do this. And believe me when I tell you, it's so gratifying to know that you can go out and chase enemies around and chase them down, or just even protecting your country. Because it's very important to know that you have National Guards backing you up. And if they're active duty and they join, hooray for them. I love them. I'll always love them. And to me, that's why I want to do what I do on Tuesday down at the VFW, just giving back to what I feel is not even a partial payment, but it is something.
Pretty hard to beat, Corporal.
Yeah.
Well said.
Thank you.
Well said. Excellent. Okay, we're going to take some questions. You feel like answering some questions?
Go ahead.
Question time. Anybody with any questions about Frank or the... Yes, sir.
Yes.
What's your pay grade when you came out?
What's my what?
Pay grade.
Pay.
Yep. Pay grade.
Well, before I got in, I was $72 a month. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
And then whenever I got promoted to corporal, whee! I went to about, I think, 178. By that time, I was married, so she got, how much did you get? About 217?
No, I got $198.
Ooh, $198. Oh. What did you do with the rest of it?
$198 to live on. So you had to watch your pennies back then.
I was just,
yeah.
You're right. You're right. It was a problem. You know, when you talk about problems, when I have a beautiful family. I do. Can't complain. Got a daughter, graduated from college. She became a school teacher. She graduated, and she's very, very knowledgeable. I have a son right now, Anthony, in the Marines, 27 years. Tony, put your hand up. There he is.
Thank you, Tony, for 27 years.
And I have a grandson and a granddaughter here that get married, and are wonderful people. I can't ask for a better setup.
And your grandson surprised you this morning?
Wait a minute.
Slow down, Marianne. We'll get there.
That's all right, hon. The doorbell rings this morning, and I said, oh, and I'm getting ready to go down to the library. I said, well, let me answer it. So I go answer the door, and there's my grandson, Chris. Chris, he's the Maryland all-around sportsman. Him and his two sons, we have Lucas and we have Dominic. There they are. They come in, they said, Dad, we want to get down when they have you at the library. I said, gee, that's mighty nice of you. And I was shocked. I was nervous.
Oh, you didn't know they were coming?
No.
Oh, nice.
No, and so that's what happens there. And, well, I have to retract one thing. My daughter, the reason I said it is because I looked at her just now. My daughter, she retired from teaching up at Cannon Mac, and she taught exceptional. How many years, Barbie?
29.
Woo, doggy.
Only 29.
29 years teaching.
Public school.
Whew. Anyhow, yeah, they live in Cecil. So anyhow, my son is still a bus driver now for Chartiers Valley. And I am nothing but a guitar player. I get down on Tuesday, I sing, I play some music. I have some people here that come down on Tuesday. They're right here in the front. And we enjoy it. We enjoy giving back to the people. We do. We don't look for anything. Now, if somebody brings some cake down, like this one always does, Gracie always has cake down here. We like it. So we indulge.
Well, you're far more than just a Tuesday guitar player, and it's obviously clear that you're crazy about your family, and that's pretty hard to beat, and we all think that's beautiful, and we applaud that. And Mary Ann, even though it was a long time ago, and it's only a couple of years, and it was stateside, nobody underestimates what a military spouse does and had to do anymore. So we all salute you for that, too, because I'm sure, given everything, it wasn't always a picnic. You had an opportunity for some part-time work. Hey, you know, that's your fault that you didn't make a little money on the side, but we won't hold that against you. So that's great.
We've had a good life together.
It's obvious, yeah.
And I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world.
Good there you go. Nobody wants me.
Good for you.
Because when he was supposed to go to Korea.
Uh-huh.
And he called me and he said, I'm going to go to Korea. He said, I want to get married.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, I got to get permission from the priest, which I did.
Yes.
He said, well, you can get married, but you need to take a chaperone. That's how it was back then.
Okay.
So I got a chaperone.
They didn't trust me. Go ahead.
But down the base, we didn't even realize that we were getting married Christmas Eve. Seriously. And the next day, I had breakfast in the mess hall.
Oh, that was special.
Now, I was shocked when I went to the mess hall. You get in line, and they throw a tray at you.
Yes.
And you go down the line.
Yes.
And I thought, wow, this is really interesting. You know, that was, you know, like I said, we spent between Fort Benning and Camp Rucker, Alabama.
Yeah.
And we met a lot of nice people. In fact, my daughter-in-law's mother and I met at Camp Rucker, Alabama, when her husband was in the Army with Frank.
Okay.
And we've stayed together ever since. I love that woman to death.
Remarkable. Good. Good.
I got a granddaughter back there wants to ask a question. Elise.
I don't want to ask a question.
You want to tell a question, huh?
Was going to Braddock until he was 86 years old in the middle of Braddock, you know, the tire shop. He reached that out. So he just retired at 86 years old. He sold his tire company. And would go to work every single day until 86.
Thank you for bringing that up. Yes, I owned the business in Braddock, and I worked until I was 86 years old.
Jeez.
I could not take the tires off a truck and throw them in the rack anymore.
Really?
little tough. And I had three mechanics, and my daughter would come over, my wife would come over once in a while, and they'd help me out answering the phone and quoting prices. I had a price book there. And I don't want to be remiss, but I was a controller at Wholesale Tire for 18 years. I controlled 12 stores in the marketplace. Canton, Ohio, Johnstown, you name it. I controlled them by computer. I had computers in each one of them stores. I took my wife with me on a couple, and we busted up a ring up in Cannonsburg. My wife did. I put her up there. I said, look, honey, we're missing some stuff up there, you know. They're telling me whenever it all gets finalized, they only have this amount of this and this amount of that. So I put her up there, and we found out what the problem was. I didn't want to get into it, but it was my wife that was snooping. And it was difficult running them stores, but I did. Like I said, I was controller. We went down East Canton, Ohio, and set up a store down there, got them online. And it was just, you know, one good thing after another. That's all I can say. We did a good job, but the effort on my part was like, where the hell did I get this energy from? I don't know, but yeah, it was tough. Thank you for bringing that up. That's my granddaughter.
Effie Snyder, do you have a question?
First of all, I'd like to say it's a wonderful band.
It is.
They play a little bit of everything.
They do.
My husband in particular loves the chorus.
Good for
him. My feet don't work well. And we have a very good time down here. We celebrate birthdays. We celebrate wedding anniversaries. Mm-hmm. Gracie just brought in a big box of goodies for Easter.
Mm-hmm.
We celebrate anything and everything. So come sometime if you got a chance, come down and listen. They're good.
So what that amounts to for the recording is that we have...
BFW even has their own personal chef.
Yes, they do. They do. Yes. Yes, and a lot of this speaks to the veterans community here in Carnegie and those that love and support them. A lot of it also speaks to Frank's band on Tuesdays, which incidentally is when most of the food shows up at the VFW, which is why I'm there. So your continued work and dedication and influence and love for all people, especially the veterans, it shows and it rubs off, and we're thrilled.
Yeah, I have. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh.
I had pictures up here of some of the things that we used to do. When I was a controller, I used to advertise for the Steelers. I got a picture of Franco Harris up here. Frankie Yankovic, when we went to the Catskills, when I was president of the Lions Club, Imperial. It's just everything I did. I thought I'd end up cuckoo, but I didn't.
What about the priest in Florida?
So for the in-person audience, come and look at these pictures when we're done. Yes, sir.
I'm just bringing up just a little bit of tidbit I thought was interesting. So the other night there on the computers, I was doing parent control on them. So when they first got married, they were at Fort Rucker. They lived in one of the estates. It's still there. It's still the same name, and their apartment's still there. It's still there.
Interesting. So we just learned that where y'all lived when you were at Fort Rucker, just off post.
What's that?
Is still, yeah. Still there, unfortunately. Okay. So unfortunately, I'm not surprised. I don't think Fort Rucker changed much when I was there, a little bit later than when you were there. I don't think much in Enterprise, Alabama changes, but that's pretty cool. I've been back to a couple places where I served at just to see how they changed, and it's remarkable. So I'm not saying you should run down to Enterprise, Alabama and have a look, but anyway, more questions.
So Marianne, you had your honeymoon breakfast in the mess hall.
What's that? Y'all had breakfast in a mess hall. I have to tell you, when they were playing down in Florida, there was Sunday morning, we had a bishop come in to do mass for the Catholics that were there, okay? So in the meantime, before the mass started, we're polking. So the bishop comes in and he said, I'm going to get ready for mass now. He said, but I will not start mass until that blonde-haired lady over there does the Polish polka with me. And I'm looking around at the blonde-haired lady, and there is one, it's you, not me. So I had to get up, and I'm going to tell you what, that bishop was one hell of a good dancer. So him and I were doing a Polish hop, and he said, boy, for Polish, you're good. I said, I'm not Polish, I'm 100% Italian. He said, you're what? I said, I've been hanging out with the Polacks for a lot of many years. So I went there, and we had the best time down there. And this bishop, not only one, but three times we did the Polish hop. Yeah.
The power of the polka. Don't underestimate it.
Yeah. He thought it was Polish. I said, no, I'm 100% Italian.
But she still does it that and tell.
Yes, sir.
Back up a little bit. What happened to the major who had the late wife as a businessman? What happened to the major?
What happened to what?
To the major whose German major, wife.
He got disciplined. But they shipped his wife back to Germany, and I think they took a bar off of him.
Yeah, they. Yeah.
Because he knew what was going on, you know. Yeah.
I just wanted to get just a little follow up on.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Sure. It would have been hard for him to say he didn't know. Effie.
I seem like I'm hogging this, but I would be interested in knowing what kind of interaction you had with Wax.
Wax.
Women in the Army Corps.
I know what it means. We weren't even allowed to look at him. We weren't even allowed to look at him.
When he was in the Army, I have to tell you, this is...
They were off limits. You couldn't even go near their fence line.
The women were on that side of the base, and the men were on this side of the base with a big steel fence between them. Not like today. They're all mingled in together.
Right.
Okay? But back then, they weren't allowed to even talk to the women in the service, and the women weren't allowed to talk to them.
Except in the office.
In the office. That was it.
Yeah. That's what it was when I was in basic training. The men were on that side of the fort, and we were on that side of the
right.
fort. And you did not intermingle.
So the question was from one of our women veterans who was a WAC in the mid-60s, if Frank had any experience with the WACs in the mid-50s. And the answer was a hard stop, no, because they weren't allowed to.
Yep.
Okay? Okay.
Did you get paid when you were a clerk during basic training?
Did we who?
Did you get paid for being a clerk and for being in basic training, or was it just all the one soldier pay?
I didn't get anything. What are you talking about? Did I get awarded? What, like what? Pay? No. There's no such thing as a pay raise because you do something special in the Army.
This is still true.
You do it, and that's included in your monthly paycheck. If you have to go out and dig a foxhole, that's included in the payment you get then.
It's true. True. Anybody else with any questions for Frank? Yes, ma'am.
So the VFW, if you're not a member, can you still get in on Tuesdays?
Yes.
Okay. What time do you play?
We start somewhere around 2 o'clock, and we set up between 1:15, 1:30, 2 o'clock. And then we have Gracie. Now Gracie comes up and does a couple of songs, too. She likes your cheating heart. And we do that, right?
The question was, when can civilians go to the VFW here in Carnegie to hear Frank and his band play?
It's fun. Ladies and gentlemen, it's fun. I'm telling you, you can't beat it. It's fun. That's all I can say. Come down, laugh. We have a man that we just sang happy birthday to him, our guitar player. Excuse me. 97 years old.
90. I thought you were the oldest person in the band.
Oh.
Oh, 97 years old.
Elmer.
Oh, yeah.
Elmer, yeah.
Yeah.
What?
Okay. So like 1,000 years of musical experience between you.
Go ahead.
So when you were selling newspapers and on the swagger bottom for me, did you know who he was or what he did at the time? Was it just
sub? I'm sorry. I
got you, Frank. The question was, when you were selling papers to Honus Wagner, did you know full good and well who Honus Wagner was?
Yes.
Okay.
I could tell the way he walked.
Okay.
Very bow-legged, and he always wore a trench coat. He'd come down over the hill. I said, hey, that's Honus. I call him Honus, dude. That's what he... And like I said, man, he pat me on the head. Hi, Sonny. Give me a nickel tip.
The question was asked by a true blue baseball aficionado that I spoke to before today. So if you have a couple minutes after this, I'll introduce you and you can elaborate more on what your impression and your experience with Mr. Wagner were, please.
Oh, we had people come to our house because my cousin over there married Judy that was... she was a big shot in the pirate organization, wasn't she? You shake yes, hit yes. Go ahead. I couldn't hear.
Yes, the answer is yes.
Yeah, and we had Johnny Berardino come over to the house. We had Cars by Clemente. We had, you name who else was there over there. We got to know these people through people like my cousin Bobby and that. And just like Franco Harris, we got to know people on the...
I have to tell you a story about Franco Harris.
Rocky Blyer. Rocky Blyer.
You don't want me to tell you a story about Franco Harris?
Yeah, go ahead. You won't rest until you do.
Frank and I went to Heinz Hall to see a show. And I bought Frank a toupee. So we're walking down to go to our seats. And all of a sudden we hear, "Hey, Franco." Turn around, "No, there's Franco Harris. Hi, Franco, how are you?" He goes, "Fine." "Hey, Frank, what the hell you got on your head?" You never saw anybody run to the men's bathroom as fast as him to take it off. He never wore it again. Our dog wore it.
Once we put it on the dog, you couldn't get it off of him.
You know, when we were going to high school, they always called us the high school sweethearts. So we were in Wooster, Ohio, and my sister-in-law was working at the nursing home. And she said to me, "You know, one of your teachers from Craigie High School is one of my patients." And I said, "Well, who would that be?" They said, "Miss Nesbitt." I said, "Oh my God, I love that lady to death." So we went over to visit her, and my sister-in-law said to her, "I have a surprise for you. Two of your students from Carnegie High School are here to see you." And she said, "Oh my." We walked in the door, you know what she said? "Oh my God, the Carnegie High School lovebirds."
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, we've been together a long time, and I wouldn't trade him in for all the money in Egypt. I mean, he's been the best husband and a father and a provider and a hard worker.
Phenomenal.
I have to say that to him.
Phenomenal. Anybody else for Frank? Okay. You done good, Corporal.
Huh?
You done good.
I did. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. No, it's just giving me a pleasure to see how some people still respect the veterans. And I mean it. The veterans, some of them, after they get away from the war, they're destroyed. They are destroyed. And you know what I'm saying? They have posts, and it's pathetic. That's why every time I see a veteran, I salute them and I give them thanks. That's all I can do. Every time I see somebody that needs help, that's a veteran, if I can, I'll help.
Can't top that. Thank you, Frank.
Thank you.